Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The following is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Welcome to the Strike Zone. Powered by Graybar, your source for electrical and data communications products for 150 years. On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, talking some Cardinals over the next hour. They fall to the Cubs 3-1 at Wrigley today. It's the Strike Zone powered by Graybar. Kyle McClellan's going to jump in, give us his thoughts on today. But also looking ahead, we'll visit with Randy Flores, the assistant GM and director of scouting, and also hear from Michael Hall of Cardinals Care. That's all What's on Deck, sponsored by Chesterfield Fence and Deck. The sign you have, the very best. Chris Raby with you. Mike Anderson in the house as well. And we are back with Kyle in a moment. Don, your home for the Cardinals and Blues, KMOX.
This is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Now, back to the Strike Zone. Powered by Graybar, your source for electrical and data communications products for 150 years on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Kyle McClellan joins us on the Strike Zone. Things don't go the Cardinals' way this afternoon at Wrigley Field. 3-1 Cubs over the Cardinals. And, Kyle, I guess let's start with the news that happened before the game. The Cubs officially introduced Craig Kimbrell, a 3-year deal for one of the guys who's been one of the best in baseball at closing out games. The bullpen, which really had been, I guess, the Cubs' weakness. Couple of guys they tried to bring in to solve some issues last year didn't work out. They just got a massive piece, assuming all goes well in his preparation.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, these pitchers that have not signed till late or halfway through the season or missed spring training, they haven't really fared that well. And so it'll be interesting to see how quick he's able to get ready and to come in and contribute in those big situations and how he looks. But no doubt about it, he's one of the best pitchers in the league normally and under normal circumstances. And so that's a big addition for the Cubs. But I want to see how this plays out.
Yeah, me too. And, you know more than anyone what it takes to get ready. He said that he's been playing long toss. He's been throwing some bullpens. Obviously, though, you don't know where or when you're going to go somewhere. You don't know how to ramp up. It's different, isn't it, trying to get ready on your own, even if he's now going to go report to Iowa. And, you know, Joe Maddon said he hopes he can be ready in about 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, and facing hitters, I mean, I'm sure he was facing, you know, high school hitters or college hitters or somebody that he could just to see, you know, guys in there. But it's different. You know, the minor leagues, every step of the minor leagues is different. The quality of guys, you can be facing high school guys and just blowing them away with your stuff and you're not having to really locate. And you can maybe get in some bad habits there and think you're getting away with things or think you're farther along than you actually are. So he's going to have to get into game speed against some good quality players. And you're hearing it with some of the guys that have been through injuries and that come back. It's that game speed. It's the little things that you don't think about in that year that you've been off or the time you've been off that all of a sudden now go really fast and move really fast. So it's all the little game speed things that are going to make a difference. And he'll start in the minor leagues and see how quickly he can get up to speed and get ready to go and contribute.
I imagine, too, that a guy like Kimbrell, who will be taking over a role that the Cubs have been searching for now over the last few years, really, I guess, since Wade Davis left, there are going to be a ton of expectations. And at the beginning of the season, if somebody gets off to a slow start or maybe, you know, you blow a couple of saves or a new acquisition gets off to a rocky start, everyone's kind of in the same boat. It's the beginning of the season. The weather's a little questionable. He's going to be dropped right into the lion's den, middle of the season, right around the All-Star break, you know, right around the trade deadline. Expectations are high. It's the middle of the summer at Wrigley. Do you think that could have any effect?
Yeah, it absolutely could. I mean, you're dealing with a guy that has a ton of experience and has been so successful in this league. So I think he's going to be able to handle all that. But, yeah, absolutely. You're getting into a new organization, and you're trying to impress. You're coming up in the middle of the season, so you don't really have that rapport with the guys. You haven't gone through spring training and all that. And the expectation of you coming over, I think guys that get traded – probably go through that as well quite a bit when they're trying to come over and adapt and contribute. So, yeah, I think that's definitely going to be something he's going to deal with. But I would expect him to be able to manage that and be able to handle it.
Kyle McClellan with us on the Strike Zone as the Cubs over the Cardinals 3-1 earlier today. Just one of those days where Cardinals couldn't get the bats going. The Cubs got a home run from Javier Baez in the first inning, and we saw Miles Michaelis leave the game. He was hit by a line drive on the forearm. He says he's fine, said it was a bruise. Actually said after the game, I don't want to know the exit velocity because I'm curious to know like what I can withstand from a physical standpoint. First, I kind of thought he was kidding, but then realized that's probably real. You probably want to know what's going on when you're out there, what you're being hit with. Did you ever have a situation like that, a scary situation like that?
I had, in the minor leagues, I got hit in the knee one time. I had a comebacker come back, like a short one-hopper come right off my kneecap. But that was about it. I was pretty lucky. A couple of line drives that maybe I'd reach out and snag or just kind of got away. But I never got squared up by one, thankfully. But, yeah, scary moment there and never like to see it, especially on the pitching arm. But for him to you know say he was okay afterwards and see how he is on his bullpen, hopefully it's in an area that you know doesn't swell up and kind of restrict some of his muscles, and he's able to throw free and clear and not have any issues.
You know, the offense had some issues today. Cardinals only run came courtesy of DeJong, and a lot of that had to do with Cole Hamels. We'll talk about him in a minute. But after Michaelis had to leave, which was maybe the nuclear scenario on a weekend where you're at Wrigley, you're facing the Cubs, and you still are hoping to figure out your starter for Monday. Mike Schilt said heavy pencil for Waka, but you didn't know if you'd have to use him this weekend. They got some good innings out of Giovanni Gallegos, Ryan Helsley, Tyler Webb, stayed away from the big boys and kept it a three-run game. You have to be pretty happy with really your bullpen top to bottom. We've talked a lot about the guys at the back end, but these guys are a great example of everything else the Cardinals have.
Yeah, for sure. That was definitely not an ideal situation coming into a weekend series in Chicago, and your starter only goes four, and now you're scrambling. And so those guys have to, you know, cover those innings, and they were able to do that. Save, like you said, some of the big boys that didn't have to go out there and throw today. Keep them rested for tomorrow when you hope that you're going to have to use them with a lead. So, yeah, that's definitely a big spot for them to cover those innings, to do it well, and to keep them there. I mean, they kept it the game where it was to where the offense had a chance to come back if they could get something going. Just unfortunately, this offense has really kind of screeched to a halt here lately these last few games and wasn't able to get it going today.
Cole Hamels was great. I've liked him a lot and was curious last year too about him being dropped into the Cubs. He ends up really being one of the more consistent guys for that rotation despite maybe some bigger expectations for some of the other pitches. What do you like about Hamels? And he really seems, I know he's been with Philly, he's been with Texas, he's been back and forth. Does he get enough attention around the game for how good he's been as long as he's been that good?
No, I think for a stretch there, yes, especially when he was in Philly there. He was known as one of the best ones. I think when he went to Texas, you know, their teams weren't that great, weren't in contention, and he kind of fell off a little bit. But, look, this guy's just been – he's been solid his whole career. I mean, his off-speed stuff is so good. His fastball changeup difference is good. He's a big-game pitcher. He's not afraid to get in there and mix it up with you. He's a guy that has given a lot of teams fits for a long time and just continues. His stuff is still there, and we saw that today. Able to come right after guys, still has that big breaking ball and his changeup. His changeup is what makes him so good and the command of his fastball. So he's been good for a long time. And I would say, you know, that's what happens, I guess. You know, you get off a winning team and some of that notoriety goes away. But in Philadelphia, I mean, he was definitely one of the premier pitchers in the league, especially from the left side.
Yeah, I guess that team was just so loaded, and the pitching they had, they were so loaded. It was easy to not get lost in the shuffle, but, you know, you think about Cliff Lee and obviously Roy Halladay and Roy Oswalt. It was, I mean, you guys know as well as anyone going up against them, but my goodness, they were just absolutely stacked.
never a fun, you didn't have.
And they all pitched 200 innings every year.
Absolutely. You didn't have a good, anytime you went in there, you didn't feel like you feel like you got the top ones, and it didn't matter who it was because their 1-5 was so good. So that was a stretch there, man, where they were, man, just those names you rattled off. I mean, those are four aces right there, and they were about as good as they got during that stretch that they had.
Kyle McClellan is with us. It is the Strike Zone powered by Graybar. All right, so Jack Flaherty tomorrow against John Lester, Adam Wainwright, and Kyle Hendricks on Sunday. I don't want to, you know, be too you know, overdramatic considering it's the first. We're still a week away from Claves' flag day, right? It's June 7th today. Mm-hmm. But you're 3.5 back now. The teams have traded sweeps over the last couple of weeks. How important, especially with Craig Kimbrell eventually looming, to take advantage of these next two, especially with Flaherty and Wainwright, two guys who have been probably the two most consistent out of your starters, aside from, I guess, maybe Hudson over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, and Wainwright pitches well in Chicago historically. So you
and in big games in Chicago, Sunday nights.
I don't know. I don't like the other pitcher on the other side. He's pretty good as well. He can give you a lot of fits. But look, all these games are important. And I think for them, they haven't got it together. So I think it's important from the standpoint of that they got to start getting things going offensively and getting things to click as a whole. They're there. They're within striking distance. They're not. We just haven't seen them click. And early on, we did. They had the best record in baseball, but really, this last month and a half, they just haven't strung it together. And offensively, you look at some of the guys that were hot early in the season; they've really fallen off. And you look at the game yesterday. You got first and third with nobody out, and they're not able to get a run across. And then today, the offense kind of struggles. So the offense, I think, right now is kind of the key. But I feel like we just flip-flop back and forth. It's like, man, the offense needs to get going. Well, starting pitching needs to get going. The bullpen, I feel like, has been fairly consistent all year for the most part, but they just haven't been able to get their starting pitching and their offense kind of synced up.
Yeah, it's just been one of those stretches. All right, we're going to talk with Randy Flores coming up in a bit, Kyle, so I wanted to switch gears a little bit. And, we talk draft, and we've talked draft with you every year, just kind of in terms of what the significance is. And for kids around St. Louis and area kids, a handful of them drafted, a couple area kids drafted by the Cardinals. What does it make you think about when you're watching the draft coverage and, seeing names and eventually seeing young guys when they come in to sign their deals, when they take BP at Bush? How does that make you feel aside from, like me, very old?
Yeah, well, it's cool to see them, get the opportunity and excitement. When I look at it, even as a major league player, you kind of look at those kids come in, and you're like, man, I wonder if they have any idea of how hard they have it here, and how much work it's going to take, and how difficult it's going to be. This is not an easy thing, and these guys are all the best in where they came from, but they're all going to the same team, and there's going to be a struggle now that you're not the best anymore, and you have to work, and you have to fight, and you have to try to learn as fast as you can and elevate yourself to the top of that team so that you can go to the next team. And then you get there and you're like at the bottom of the totem pole again. You got to work your way up again. You got to do that through about 6 or 7 minor league levels. So it's a lot of work. I think when I got drafted and you sign, you're just thinking, man, it's just going to be a matter of maybe a year or two and I'm going to be in the big leagues and everything's going to be great. And I had no idea about all the struggles, the difficulties, the ups and downs that it was going to take to ultimately have the chance to persevere and make it to the major league.
You spent a year in the big leagues with Flo. What's it been like to see him take on this position, the director of scouting, now the assistant GM as well, and guy who's done a ton of different things in the industry but really seems to be hitting his stride with the Cardinals?
Yeah, he's great. I think he's going to be a GM one day of a ball club. He just I was on the Cardinal Caravan with him this winter and get to spend time with him here and there, but he's just a professional, great guy, has a great ability to evaluate and process and deal with people. I think he really does a good job of that. He's a smart cat and the Cardinals are lucky to have him and for him to be in charge of that. He's done a really nice job over the last few years of the draft and is a guy that I think you're going to see his role start to increase more and more as he has more and more success.
All right, it's Kyle MacLellan. Kyle, we will chat with you for a couple of pregames the rest of this weekend. Have a great weekend, man.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Randy Flores is next. It's the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar. Chris Raby with you, Mike Anderson, in the house as well. Cardinals fall to the Cubs 3-1 this afternoon, but we'll talk draft. Lots to get to with Randy after this on KMOX.
This is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line. Now, back to the Strike Zone. Powered by Graybar, your source for electrical and data communications products for 150 years on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Major League Baseball draft wrapped up earlier this weekend, and we now have a chance to talk about the draft and the last couple of days, I guess the last year, and next year starts now with Cardinals Director of Scouting and Assistant General Manager Randy Flores. Flo, what's going on, man?
Oh, it's good to hear from you. I'm doing well.
I can imagine that everyone's able to grab a little bit of rest and maybe wean off the caffeine a bit, but holy cow, especially with the way the schedule has changed for the Major League Baseball draft. Just tell our listeners what these last couple of days have been like and what it's like to complete the actual draft and then start to move forward with the next phase.
Yeah, you know what? Until you're embedded in it and until you just kind of see that journey, it's really hard to explain. But I'll just tell you that now that the draft is done, it's completed, the clock is not running anymore. It's a very different feeling for, you know, for myself and for our scouts. As you wake up now knowing that you're already looking towards next year, you know, specifically, you know, when you're thinking of our scouting department and being the director of the department, there's just a nonstop clock going on in the back of your head that just starts speeding up. And then our scouts come in town, and then the day one starts, and then day two, and then day three, and that clock is just churning. And so now that clock has kind of started its slow tick. As we're now prepping for 2020, but still trying to finish up, you know, rounding out this 2019 onboarding process.
Yeah, you've had also a handful now of drafts that look very, very different, right? Because of not just draft position, but a couple of years ago, not having a first-round pick. You've kind of been all over the board, I'm sure, in terms of your board, your preparation, and then it's probably been very different, especially that first night, how things have shaken out for you guys and for you especially being at the helm.
No, you're right. Look, in 2017, that first day, we were spectators. And so, you know, you go from being a first-year director in 2016, where we had some extra picks, to 2017 being in that situation we just described. You know, the 2018 draft more mirrors that 2016 draft. And then, you know, just the one that we just completed, it's kind of like, okay, this feels a little bit more normal, although none of them are really normal because of where we draft. You just don't know. You're not able to really chart your own course the way you are in those top 5 to 10 picks. And certainly the way at least third-party pundits had stated it, you know, things were kind of set at the top 8. After that, it diverges widely from org to org, pick to pick, preference to preference. And so you really do have to cast a wide net in preparation for all the scenarios that can unfold on day one.
But even when you're observing, you're always gathering information, right?
No, you are. And that's the part. It's like, yes, you're gathering info, and it's that balance between, you know, data overload and data focus. You know, where are we going to focus? Who might be in play and not be in play? I would say that in 2017, we knew who wouldn't be in play because we didn't pick on day one. But that being said, I think the layperson might think, well, certainly they know who is in play at 19 come 2019. But the industry sounded like they weren't too sure what was going to happen 10 through 19, much less us.
Before we talk about this year a little bit, you could have been like walking around, you know, and just saying, hey, 2016, those back-to-back picks in the comp round looked pretty good with Dylan firing through a lot of national rankings, I think, in most industry top 100 rankings now, and Dakota, who ho-hum, just put together an incredible month of May and is in the starting rotation. Not bad for two picks at the end of the comp round.
Well, look, as you know, and you've had conversations with directors before me, that we have big shoes to fill, whoever wears the title in my seat, of getting value everywhere you go. And I've stated before, look, I hope we pick later than 19 in years to come. And so there's a responsibility and a standard that we have to maintain. And so it's actually quite the opposite of sticking out the chest. Mm-hmm. You know, our hope is that happens. That's the standard we hope we hold it to, and it's a credit to Dakota and Dylan Carlson for meeting that standard. And certainly Delvin Perez is rebounding nicely in Peoria and made the All-Star team, and we're looking for his better days ahead as well.
Randy Flores is with us as we talk the draft, which wrapped up earlier this week. You guys selected 24 pitchers, Flo, and I know a lot of folks excited about your top overall pick. I know you, with the comments you made, were excited about him. Zach Thompson, the left-hander from Kentucky. Tell folks a little bit about Zach and maybe what it was like to see him available at number 19 and what you guys like about him and what he's done at Kentucky.
Well, let me just say what we like about him. He's left-handed. He throws up to 97. He has pitched at an elite level with bat-missing stuff at both his fastball and breaking ball. Why is that guy there at 19? Well, you know, when you pick at 19, There are always issues that you have to work through to wonder why a player is there. You know, we're not picking in the top five. And for Zach, obviously, there were issues that came up with him missing some time his sophomore year, certainly what happened as his high school senior year. So then how do we have the conviction and confidence to make that pick is, well, look, he's rebounded, and he's weathered that load, and he's thrown almost 100 innings this last year in the SEC, and he did it with elite velocity. And so when you combine those two things together, I think that it's a great opportunity to take a guy who, if every single box was checked, is gone in the top 10 picks. And so for us, where we are, to have that type of talent with that type of track record, bouncing back for some of the question marks that he had in his health, we are looking forward to him continuing on his upward slope.
I'm sure it can be hard to place value on level of competition or development within a program, Randy, but you did draft a number of college pitchers out of big-time programs, big-time conferences, three guys who are still involved in super regional action. So how do you or do you value that? How much feedback do you rely on, and how does that work into the process in terms of when you're making decisions on draft day?
Look, I want to make sure I don't overstate that. That is important. Trust me, it is. But I think what's equally important, maybe even more so, is just the conviction that someone can handle adversity. When you play in the third deck here in Busch Stadium and you're dealing with those nerves, or you're dealing with the anxiety of your journey through the minor leagues, or you're dealing with, you know, your body not feeling great, or riding a long bus trip, or the pressure that comes with balancing, you know, your school demands and your athletic demands, you know, there's a lot of question marks on that. And I think that any time someone goes through some sort of adversity in their amateur journey, when they're doing it under someone else's leadership, under someone else's scholarship money, we're able to evaluate that. And every team's different on how they incorporate that into their own process, to their own model, to their own decision tree. But for us, you know, when you see someone like that at whatever level of competition who has faced some hiccup and come out with it and looking like they have made some adjustments, that's very intriguing to us.
Randy, you mentioned guys that can pitch off their fastball. How do you value that? And guys that have command, guys whose command you like, and then also how do you take into account what you might project as maybe an uptick in velocity or where you can reasonably expect velocity perhaps to go versus command that they already have and can already use to set up other pitches?
No, yeah, you okay. So I kind of a lot of questions there, but I would break it down simply into this thing. Our job is to accurately attempt to evaluate who they are now. But secondly, it's to also try to predict within some error bars, some level of conviction of what they might be, meaning what improvements might they make, what part of their repertoire might they hone, what type of strength gains might they make. And so for each type of profile of varying levels of their age or developmental arc, you know, that's our guess and our best estimate on what they might be. And so certainly if someone starts out like a ball of clay in high school, you know, you're projecting even more on what they might be. You know, when you're like Tony Losey, who has a great fastball, who has competed at the highest level, who pitches off his fastball, has this marks of starter traits, that's a different spot. You know, when you're like, you know, Connor Thomas, where you've seen someone who with someone, others might say, look, it's not average velocity. Well, guess what? Without average velocity, he is doing things against good competition that really are intriguing, and you're betting on that skill set has a chance to play at the upper levels. And so it's a blend at each pick. You know, the hope is to not pigeonhole you into any one certain type or ilk, but to be open to all types.
I imagine you also take into account the tremendous assets that the club has scattered throughout the organization from a developmental standpoint, the guys that will actually have hands on these balls of clay beginning as soon as they report to wherever they're going to report to, and then each spring and each season.
No, you're exactly right. And when you look at Gary LaRock and Tim Levesque and Dr. Robert Butler, you know, those who lead our player development, those who lead our performance and our pitching program, you know, our hope is that we give them something to work with and let them work their magic, even when in instances where we don't see it, right? They have just such a track record of finding the unfindable and culling value from all spots that we hand them.
I do want to ask you, too, as we move away from pitching for a moment, about your second pick, prep outfielder Trey Fletcher. I mentioned Dylan Carlson earlier, and some of the toolsy outfielders, some of the guys who I think have been really exciting when we've gotten a peek at them in spring training or at various levels, toolsy position players. How is the organization help you guys identify where you think those players can go once they become a part of the Cardinals?
Yeah, you know, two different types of guys, right? And so Dylan Carlson was someone who was on the amateur circuit, who the bet was, although they weren't on third-party lists, it was someone that we had identified whose better days were ahead, right? Whose skill set would allow him to compete at a level until his strength caught up. And the indications are that, look, you know, there's a good chance that that might happen. You know, with Trey Fletcher, it was a unique scenario. You add even more, variability to the outcomes of him, coming from the cold weather, someone who was originally a 2020 draft pick, but again, and someone who was not yet on up really high on those third-party lists. But you're even starting to see that, you know, he was really targeted as next year, one of the top high school picks. You know, the other thing that's really intriguing about Trey is, you know, he was committed to Vanderbilt, and, you know, one of the elite programs in the country. And Tim Corbin was willing to make that bet on him. And so you take that and you take the likelihood that those tools are a great place to start with our player development. You know, now, you know, we turn them over, hopefully, to player development and let them refine and give them the reps that he's due in the professional ranks. And let's see what comes of that.
You know, Randy, before we wrap up, I just have to ask you about everyone who makes this thing possible, from Mo and Gersh and you all the way down, because as I was leaving, I guess late Wednesday night after the rainout, saw just a stream of folks, of men and women, coming out of the ballpark in polos with Cardinal backpacks, and I was like, oh, those are probably, you know, Flo's troops. And just everyone who worked their tails off, who is now working their tails off, moving forward for another year, what can you say about your team and everyone that makes this thing happen and has their handprints on this incredible track record of drafting, development, and getting players to the St. Louis Cardinals?
No, it's well said, Chris. So look, I'm the spokesperson, and I'm the voice on the other end of this call who speaks for the countless hours that our entire department, you know, works and devotes their life to. But you gotta think of Mo here, you know, and Mo. And the autonomy he provides and the support and resources that him and Mr. DeWitt provide to the scouting department are unmatched. And so what that leaves the department feeling is the confidence and conviction of knowing that, you know, our president and our owner believes in the work we do and leaves those decisions in the hands of people that they trust. And that gives you just a lot of confidence, a lot of conviction to press on and to make difficult choices, knowing that your owner and your president believe in the final product.
Well, congrats on another draft in the books. I know fans will eagerly await the forthcoming news and where these guys end up next, Randy. So appreciate the time as always, and we'll see you at the ballpark.
Outstanding. Thanks so much.
Building the Future is powered by Graybar. A big thanks to Randy Flores. We'll turn it over to Tom Ackerman with Michael Hall next on The Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on KMOX.
We are the voice of Cardinal Nation, America's sports voice, KMOX.
This is a special presentation of the Mungadas St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Now, back to The Strike Zone, powered by Graybar, your source for electrical and data communications products for 150 years on America's sports voice, KMOX.
Tom Ackerman with you now, and Michael Hall of Cardinals Care is with me, and that is a good thing because we've got a great event to talk about, the RBI Golf Classic, the Ted Savage RBI Golf Classic, which is coming up Monday, June 24th at Norwood Hills Country Club. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing well, Tom. Thank you.
Absolutely. Good to be with you. When I say Ted Savage, I think of somebody who is put his heart and soul into youth here in the St. Louis area, and he's been doing it for decades, hasn't he?
Yeah, no, that's a very fair way to put it. Ted has done a lot for the community and kids in the community. He started this tournament. This year will be the 30th year of the tournament.
Wow.
Started a long time ago by just using his name and his contacts to ask people to help him raise money to support kids in the community through the RBI program, and we've been fortunate to continue the tradition of having the event each year.
Well, it's going to be a good time. So it's Monday, June 24th, and included, you have a Cardinals celebrity playing with each foursome, don't you?
We do. You know, we decided to make a somewhat of a significant jump this year in order to try to have a larger impact for kids in the community and raise more money towards that. And so what we've done is we are now having the event on an off day where we're going to be able to include some of our current players and coaches, where we've done it in the past with celebrities, but it's traditionally been all alums. This year we're able to incorporate some current players and coaches and alumni. So that adds a bit of excitement to the event. We're moving it to Norwood Hills Country Club, and they have two full 18 holes, so we're able to utilize both of those courses to make it a little bit of a larger event. So it's going to be very exciting. And of course this year the biggest addition and is that Mike Schilt, our manager, is hosting the whole event, so it's going to be great.
Yeah, I talked to Mike Schilt about it. Here's what he said.
Yeah, it's what, to me, it's a big passion of mine, and it's what it's all about. You know, being able to pay it forward and mentioned being a good caretaker and steward of the game. I think it's important to get in our community and help grow and provide opportunities for young people that, you know, wouldn't have them otherwise. And, you know, really hopeful that people can come out and support the tournament, because it's, you know, completely for a good cause, and all the proceeds go to just that, just helping young people. And it's an honor to partner with the Ted Savage Group and be available to help that program as well.
What a good man he is. Mike Schilt talking about the Ted Savage RBI Golf Classic. Michael?
Yeah, he's been great. And he, you know, my understanding, Mike's not a big-time golfer, but, he, you know, he's committed his time to help raise more funds for the event, to be able to raise more money to put in the community. He's going to be there the entire time with the ability to move in and around the space and around the course and visit with all the participants. He's committed to a post-golf question and answer for all the participants, the golfers that are going to be there that day. So he's all in, and that's great to have him kind of anchoring the event along with, you know, Teddy for what he's done over the last 30 years.
Yeah, he's a pretty busy guy. The baseball team takes up a lot of his time, so you would understand why he doesn't play a lot of golf. Although he's a fisherman, I bet you he could pull some fish out of those lakes and ponds around there.
Maybe we might catch him doing that in between a couple of holes. You never know.
Yeah, the possibility of that. So he's doing a Q&A afterwards. You have the Cardinals celebrities, but there's more, Michael. You are offering tickets to Cardinals games as well for registration.
Yeah, so what we wanted to do is try to incorporate, you know, being at the ballpark as part of the overall experience. So for each foursome, we are inviting each foursome down to the ballpark on June the 20th, which is the Thursday prior to the Monday event. And what we're calling it is Celebrity Selection Night. So each person will come down pregame, will be in a private area. A representative from each foursome will go up to the front of the room. We'll have the celebrities in an envelope. They'll draw an envelope, and that's the celebrity that they'll play with.
Wow.
Coming up on Monday, and then we have a suite for each person in the foursome to enjoy the game that night. So we just thought it was a way to make it fun to be able to, for the foursomes to be able to choose the celebrities themselves instead of us assigning them, as well as give them an opportunity to take in a game as part of their support of the tournament.
Wow, that's very cool. Then you'll have the standard for a golf tournament, which would be food beforehand. I understand you have a continental breakfast. You have snacks and drinks out on the course, and you have a silent auction, which I'm sure is filled with Cardinals memorabilia.
Yeah, so we do. It's going to be a traditional tournament. You know, the one thing that we, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to use both courses out at Norwood. So there's limited space. It's not going to be a full tournament as some people may have played in the past, because with respect to all of the celebrities' time, we want to be able to keep the tournament moving. So we are going to limit the number of teams that we have. And, yes, there will be continental breakfast prior to. Each golfer will get a nice they'll have an option to choose from some nice options from our friends with Titleist. We'll play the tournament. It's an 11 a.m. shotgun, and then afterwards there'll be some heavy hors d'oeuvres to enjoy in the main ballroom as we prepare for Mike's question and answer. As far as the silent auction goes, that will be part of kind of the post game. We'll have it set up pre-golf and post-golf. With more some memorabilia, and we're going to try to sprinkle in some of those experiential type auction items that aren't necessarily readily available.
This sounds like an amazing time. This is the Ted Savage RBI Golf Classic at Norwood Hills Country Club on Monday, June 24th. So all of the funds that you have, Cardinals Care has done a tremendous job of dividing those up throughout the community. Can you just let us in on what a typical year is like and how those grants go about, Michael?
Sure. So for Cardinals Care, a lot of the money that we raise, some of it is going to come from this tournament. But throughout the year, what we do is really three different things. We have our own youth baseball development program for kids ages 5 to 13, and it's called Redbird Rookies, and we try to provide baseball in areas where baseball isn't being played. In support of that program, we build ball fields, and hopefully we can come into an area where we've developed a Redbird Rookie League and then build a field for those kids to be able to play on and kind of call their own home field. Thus far, we've built 23. And we will be dedicating our 24th field, hopefully, here this summer. And then, as you mentioned, we also give grants to other nonprofits that are in support of kids in the St. Louis, or Cardinals Nation, I should say, because it's not all of them are right here in the St. Louis area. And that is a wide range of different grants that we give each year. And that's how we, from Cardinals Care, that's how we distribute the funds that we're able to raise each year. This tournament itself will also support the RBI program, which is reviving baseball in the inner city, which is a major MLB community initiative, as well as Mike Schilt's Foundation, which is Baseball for Life. And it's a mentoring program that uses baseball to develop life skills and reinforce positive behavior. So the funds from this tournament will go three separate ways, but all of them are dedicated to support young people.
That's fantastic. Again, the RBI Golf Classic, the Ted Savage RBI Golf Classic, RBI stands for Reviving Baseball in the Inner City with Cardinals Care, is at Norwood Hills Country Club. It's Monday, June 24th, and all you need to do, Michael, is go to cardinals.com, and you can get there, right?
Correct. You can go to cardinals.com/RBI golf for more information. And it gives all the information, a lot of what I discussed with you today, and hopefully you'll be able to pick up some more by going to the website. Or if you're interested in registering, you can email us at rbigolf@cardinals.com.
It's an 11 a.m. shotgun start on Monday, June 24th at Norwood Hills Country Club for the Ted Savage RBI Golf Classic. This is the 30th, and Cardinals manager Mike Schilt will be there, and you can pepper him with questions afterwards in the Q&A. I'm sure he'll love that.
Yeah, he does. He does a great job.
He does. He likes that stuff. We really appreciate it, Michael. Thank you for the time, and all the best with the golf tournament. It's terrific what you all do.
Thank you, Tom.
That's Michael Hall with Tom Ackerman on the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar. We will regroup tomorrow. Cardinals will send Jack Flaherty to the mound. Actually, you know, I think the best thing that could have happened to them was the rainout earlier this week, because it allowed them to move all of the pitching back. So they got Dakota Hudson yesterday, who was fantastic. They got Miles Michaelis today. And then really, as I talked about with Kyle, some quality innings out of Gallegos, Helsley, and Webb. So you save the back end of the bullpen, and they had a day off on Wednesday. So, you know, they've only been used one day in the last three. So then you get to move Flaherty to tomorrow to take on John Lester, and then Wainwright against Kyle Hendricks on Sunday. And then you'll just need the starter on Monday night in Miami against the Marlins, which is, with all due respect to the Marlins, perhaps a bit less daunting than Sunday night baseball against the Cubs. And not to say anyone would be overwhelmed by the moment, especially if it's Michael Wacha, who Mike Schilt said is in heavy pencil to make that start in Monday based on the need for him this weekend and the coverage this weekend. But, you know, if it is Daniel Ponce de Leon, if you need some extra coverage, if it's a combination of guys, then you're in Miami against the Marlins. And it just sets up to have, you know, three horses on the mound this weekend at Wrigley against the Cubs. So it's never fun to have a rainout, and it can be a bummer if you're at the ballpark, but I think it's going to work out well. Big thanks to Kyle McClellan, Randy Flores, and Michael Hall. Thanks to Tom Ackerman as well for helping us out with the Strike Zone, powered by Graybar. Sunday night, 7:23 p.m. One of the biggest days, one of the biggest evenings, one of the biggest games in the history of St. Louis sports. And even just looking over my shoulder here in the Camoec studio over at Enterprise Center, already starting to get chills thinking about it. Whether you're at the game, if you're here in downtown St. Louis, if you're like Jack, who tweeted me, who's stationed on Guam and took leave so he doesn't have to go to work. Enjoy this weekend and enjoy Sunday. We'll talk to you beginning at 5 o'clock on Sunday for the Blues and the Boston Bruins, Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final. This has been Munganess, St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line, and The Strike Zone, powered by Graybar on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.